Hi guys, and welcome to a new episode of Coffee with Kathy and Claire. I'm Kathy.
And I'm Claire, and this podcast is all about sharing our own personal experiences and struggles with modern day parenting.
And having a few laughs along the way. This show is for everyone, mums, dads, grandparents, foster parents, adoptees, everyone.
It's an outlet for all your struggles and to know that you are not alone.
So pop us on your Bluetooth in your car, headphones in while you're going for a walk, or do what I do and wear headphones while I tackle that never-ending pile of laundry.
Or just take the load off and have a coffee with Kathy and Claire. Hello and welcome to another episode of Coffee with Kathy and Claire. Sadly, Kathy is not with us today. She is tied up with some of her own family things. So, hey, Kathy. However, we are in for a treat because we are joined with April Kane, who's a clinical psychologist, and we are going to be talking about the diagnosis of ADHD. But I will hand over the mic just so you can give a little bit of a background about yourself and who you are, April.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's You're a welcome.
Pleasure. Yeah. So I'm April Kane. I'm a clinical psychologist. I have my own little private practice here in Perth called Great Minds Therapy and ADHD Services. I've been there for just over a year now. And prior to that, I was in a group practice. I have done lots of things in the psychology world because I like to just try lots of different things and varied interests and whatnot. I live here in Perth with my 9-year-old daughter and my husband and our new rescue dog, Tilly.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, she's the best. What else would you like to know about me?
Well, I think you've given us a good insight into obviously your expertise and obviously why you're on today as a guest, so that we can go into something that, like, because obviously all of our listeners would know that my son's been diagnosed with ADHD, and I do struggle to accept the diagnosis just because of the fact that there's like so much information out there, so much about the diagnoses of these types of things. And if it's all right for me saying, you know, you yourself has been diagnosed with ADHD, I'm always questioning whether or not I'm just a nut job or if I've got ADHD. But that's the thing. Yeah, but I think it might be. But, you know, I guess that to begin with, it's just like start getting a comprehensive understanding. You know, explain what ADHD is and maybe some of the like common symptoms.
Yeah.
Just to wrap that part up before we go into the next bit. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, so ADHD, for those that are listening that aren't familiar, it stands for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great name.
No, it's not.
Not
it
a great
really
name.
It really isn't, because it's a superpower, really.
Yeah, it can be if you can figure out how to harness
it.
Not to say that even if you can figure out how to harness it, that it doesn't come with its challenges and things that people definitely struggle with, but the name kind of suggests that it's just, you know, one of two things, a deficit of attention, or that you're jumping off the walls, hyperactive, impulsive, and that really doesn't aptly describe what the experience is for people. So that's part of it, that difficulty focusing attention, holding it where you want it to be. It's lots of other things too, like difficulty starting tasks, that sort of really chronic, what people would call procrastination, but it's much more than procrastination. Forgetfulness, like poor working memory, difficulty sort of following through on things, having trouble planning and organizing mentally and also physically your stuff. Like, you know, quite typically people with ADHD live in a state of organized chaos.
That does sound a lot like me. If I'm completely honest, and I've always like, actually I used to go traveling, you've just taken me back to a really good friend of mine, Nikki, and I'm the type of person, like, this is pre-children, you know, I was like not packed to go on like a 3-month trip around Southeast Asia like 2 days before we were leaving. She's like, what suitcase are you taking? I was like, oh, I haven't really got one yet. I'm just waiting to see if I can borrow one from someone. And then her packing my bag for me.
Yeah.
And she did used to say that, just be like, you just love the chaos of not being organized, don't you? Yeah. And I sort of do.
Yeah, well, it's funny because sometimes we need that bit of pressure, yeah, and time sensitivity and sense of urgency,
mm-hmm,
to be able to create enough of the brain chemicals that we need to be able to get something done.
Yeah.
It's simply, so to go back to the description of, yeah, it, ADHD, let's see, I've lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
Really, like... Yeah.
Typical.
Good example, right?
So in real, like, time.
Yeah, like lose your train of thought, yeah, in the middle of a sentence.
Love
or,
it.
Yeah. So being quite tangential, needing too many words to explain, yeah, something. But it's more of like a problem regulating. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So not just regulating, though, your attention, but it's problems with regulating lots of other things. And when I say regulating, I mean sort of having a sense of being able to manage so that things are relatively steady-ish, or they feel that, you know, there's maybe like nobody can see me, but I'm talking with my hands, like, yeah, a little bit sort like of, little, yeah, you know, up and down, rather than these kind of big fluctuations like a roller coaster. Yeah. So regulating your attention, regulating your emotions,
yeah, yeah,
that's a really big one, which is actually not in the diagnostic criteria.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
because I mean, children find it hard to regulate their emotions anyway, but as an adult, I think we all find it hard. I don't think you need to have ADHD to not be able to regulate your emotions, but certainly to try and put the things into practice, maybe it's a little bit more difficult. Because as you was talking, I was just thinking about things like when you was talking about forgetfulness, but not even just in, I forgot my keys. I think that can be done quite in the moment of stress, you know, you can forget that. But what I was just thinking, and it just come to thought for me, was that sometimes I might be reading a book and I'm really interested in this book, but I've forgotten all the characters. So I have to go back and be like, oh, yeah, what happened in that situation? Mm-hmm. So retaining that information.
Yeah.
And then as you're talking now, I'm actually studying, I'm doing some study at the moment in life coaching, because I'm really fascinated about helping other people and the brain and stuff. But I do find I have to keep taking myself back. Like, you know, study is quite challenging. Yeah. Is that another... Yeah. Potential symptom. You're like, yeah. Oh dear, absolutely. I'm diagnosing you, yeah, right now.
We're doing an episode, yeah, live diagnosis.
Yeah, that would be great.
No, but yeah, absolutely. What you're describing are very typical, quite common characteristics or traits. I found, like, for a personal example, when I was studying, or even now, like when I'm writing a report or something like that, if I've taken a break. You know, I've started writing this piece of work, and I've taken a break, and it's been, you know, more than a couple of days to come back to it. I almost have to reorient myself. I've got to start at the start and read what I've already written.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult just to sort of pick up from where I left off, and that could be, you know, a couple of days, or if we get interrupted doing something, it's very difficult for us to go back and shift our attention back to where it was. That's something else that's really affected in people with ADHD. I mean, what you're talking about before, reading a book, is so relatable.
Yeah.
You know, do you ever get, you can be reading a book you're really interested in, and then you sort of get to the end of a page or a chapter and you go, shit, I got here, but I'm not sure what's happened. I'm going to have to go back and flick back to where I can last remember actually reading.
That is exactly what happens. Yeah. And, you know, I have a habit of reading out loud as well. Mm-hmm. So if I'm reading, I can't just read and be like in my head read. Mm-hmm. It'll be like, and if there's somebody else there and I don't want to do it, I'll actually, without even thinking about it, I'll say a word out loud.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I'm on a train or something and I'd be reading a book, and then I'd just be like Bob in the book, you know, whatever I was reading, just sort of look around. And people, if they have not got their headphones in or whatever, will just look at me and I'm like, oh,
is this
just
lady
reading.
Saying random words?
Looking like a crazy person.
Do you have
person.
A sense of why you do that? What need it meets for you?
I really just thought that was what everybody did.
Yeah.
If I'm completely honest.
Yeah.
And it was only when you was talking then about, you know, the forgetfulness, and then that's where my mind went to, was, oh, I wonder if that's why I find it really hard to maintain that information. Mm. And there is a narrative, and I don't know if the narrative in my head is just because I am so busy and I'm the mum of a, whether it's ADHD or just that he's super highly spirited, who knows, whatever the case may be. But it makes that big monologue in your head of like all the things that you've got to do. It's almost like a never ending narrative, and so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely when you're talking about all of the symptoms, there's a lot that's relatable. But then my next sort of phase would go into asking the question of like, okay, because stress can mimic that. Mm. Anxiety can mimic that, which I would definitely say that I can feel both. Because, you know, sometimes you can almost feel the stress coming out of you. And just life in general, being so fast-paced is probably the word that I want to use.
Yeah.
You know? Because it is fast-paced, isn't it?
Yeah.
And especially, I think, with a FIFO relationship, I'm not sure if in your practice you deal with families who have FIFO. And, you know, and our particulars is month on, month off.
Mm.
So it's like you're living essentially from month to month and it just flies.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Yes, I have clients who are in FIFO relationships or are FIFO themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it's going back quite some years now. Before we had our daughter, my husband did FIFO and that same sort of roster, a month on, a month off. And it's when I was studying, so I found, it was almost like having two separate lives, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You have this is the me when he's gone and all the things that I can get done and all the things that I don't get done when he's gone. And then there's the time when he's home and wanting to maximize that time. And But that sort of makes all of a sudden the whole year's gone by and you think, where did that go?
Exactly. And then so that's where I get the lines a little bit blurred. When it comes to do I, don't I, and things like that. And also, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who have that same sort of thought, you know, is it that or is it, you know, this is why where the diagnosis comes in and that process for it of is it that or is it something else? And especially in children, because if you've got like somebody who's difficult, it can unfocus your mind. And then you ask yourself questions as an adult, which you diagnose adults, right? Mm-hmm. So you would ask yourself something along the line of, well, how did I live my life okay until I got to this age? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But, yeah, maybe a little bit more on that.
Yeah. Well, my first thought is like, which part? Because there's so much to what you just described, right?
I just brain dumped a lot on you, didn't I?
Go for it. That's how I live my life. So... maybe first to speak about the similar feelings, sort of stress, anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting observation because, and maybe, you know, when we talk more about the diagnostic process and the diagnostic criteria, this might also sort of be some relevant information and context. But, you know, we're finding that now there's so many adults who are seeking diagnosis, who are seeking assessment. And what we're hearing and what we know is that there's women especially who have been diagnosed or either formally or they've thought through their life that they've related to feelings of stress and anxiety in particular, or perhaps depression, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And actually what we know is that for women in particular, there's been a lot of misdiagnosis.
Right, okay.
So it's sort of until more recent times, and I think that's because of advances in perhaps research and just sort of a shift in the paradigm, so a shift in the way that we understand and think about and perceive ADHD and how it shows up and how it doesn't show up, that it was typically thought of as being like a childhood disorder, and I'm saying disorder in sort of quotation marks.
Yes, I know. I was about to say you are quotation mark because we don't like to obviously label as a disorder.
Yeah, and I'm absolutely on that. I try to be quite careful in the language that I use because I think it's really important to be affirming in our approach to how we describe ADHD and just other neurodivergences, autism, sensory processing. There's so many things under this umbrella of neurodivergence, which again, for people who might be listening that are not familiar with that term, although it's very widely used now and on social media and everywhere, really, you can't help but come across this. But neurodivergence is just simply describing differences in the way our brains are wired.
Yeah.
So just brain differences.
Yeah.
But typically ADHD was thought of as being something that only was a childhood neurodevelopmental disorder. And that essentially that pretty much the thinking was that as you became an adult, you grew out of it. And also that typically the symptoms described and all the research was geared towards little boys. So males and typically white males.
Okay.
Yeah. So not a lot of, ironically, divergence or diversity in how it was studied and looked at, which is why we've got this kind of diagnostic criteria and list of symptoms essentially that don't quite fit for, especially for women, that are now sort of also leading to a lot of adults seeking diagnosis because they're going, well, hang on a second, actually, I can relate to a lot of this. So when we think about someone who has, let's say, for example, a woman who feels very anxious a lot of the time, feels really stressed a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not just anxiety. So if you think about anxiety or stress, what are you noticing, like, for me, for example, for you?
Yeah.
What would you notice? How would you describe the way that you feel anxious or stressed?
I literally feel as though if you feel that anxiety and that stress, it's almost like you can feel it oozing out of you. It's like builds up almost like a snowball, if you like. And so it will start off quite little and you'll be like, I can deal with it. I'm just giving myself a hug right now. Oh, yeah, I'm good. And then that snowball will just keep going and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I suppose then you get to the point where you're in quite dangerous waters because the snowball's melted and you've got a lot of water going on, if that's a good terminology for it. I don't know. But so the stress levels and can come out of nowhere, I suppose. So you could be like, one minute you think you've got this, you're good, and then the next minute you're kind of falling apart. And that's, you put that down to, I guess, a lot of stress and anxiety and environmental factors that's in your life, if that makes a lot of sense.
It makes sense, and there's no saying that it couldn't be anxiety and stress, but it could also be ADHD. Or it could be both.
Yeah.
Right? So what
they'd
I see,
be interlinked, I suppose, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. So much overlap. And I think where I started a thought earlier, and I don't think I finished it, was, you know, there's a lot of women that have been misdiagnosed. And told they have anxiety. Did I finish that thought?
Maybe you were saying that they'd misdiagnosed with anxiety and depression when actually they have ADHD. And so actually I'll take you to a question that's a little bit left field. Do you feel like there would be a high percentage of females in particular or adults in general that actually do have ADHD because of how complex our mind is and because of perhaps even the like just DNA changes that would have happened with the amount of technology that's obviously increasing the I'm not a neuroscience or anything, but you know, all of them neurons in our brain have been affected, so therefore our brains are being used so much more than what they potentially ever were before. And we've got so much information, because the reason I ask this is because I'm just taking myself back to the amount of conversations that I've had with mums who have children of my age, not my age, but my kids' age, and how many are just exhausted. And yet I'll talk to somebody who is perhaps a bit older than me or had kids a lot younger, and their children, they did not seem to have the same type of overwhelmed and just this feeling of it all being quite honestly too much at stages. And there seems to have been a switch. So going back to the question, is like, do you feel as though because of the amount of change in technology and in instant gratification and all of these releases of dopamine essentially can be related to such a jump? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes
sense. And it's a loaded question, so if you feel like you can't answer it, that's fine.
Look, I don't know that I can answer it from a really informed, like, chemical, neuros, psychobiological perspective today. Mm-hmm. I certainly would love to look into it.
Maybe that's what Tidal Minds will do.
Yeah. But it would make sense. It makes sense, but yeah. I guess there's also a lot of other things with that. So if you think about other generations,
mm-hmm.
And I mean older generations than us,
yes.
It was just very different in terms of societal expectations, yeah. societal norms.
Parenting
styles, parenting expectations, even, you know, like, there wasn't really the options for technology and things like that. We didn't that perhaps there weren't as many demands, or there were different demands mm-hmm. for our attention, and there were different demands and expectations placed on, let's say, women of previous generations, where it was perhaps a much more sort of conservative, traditional gender roles and stereotypes, yeah. They didn't also perhaps have, there was no social media. So then no comparison.
Yes, so you couldn't compare. And you also couldn't have access to the information.
Yeah.
To try and do things differently.
Yeah, absolutely. But totally, I hear what you're saying about, so dopamine, for those that aren't familiar, is a brain chemical, neurotransmitter,
mm-hmm.
And it's involved in the reward pathways in our brain. So in our brain, the reward and pleasure pathways in our brain. So basically, it's related to motivation. It's related to being able to kind of have the impetus or the drive to get up and go and do, to get something done or to do something. And the understanding is that with people with ADHD, that we have... we don't produce as much dopamine for some reason. And also our brains are not, brain receptors are not as good as sucking up the dopamine and using it.
Mm-hmm.
So we look for other ways to create dopamine, because our brain is naturally trying to seek or create dopamine to help us do the thing.
Yeah.
So, for example, when we think about kids who are very like movement seeking, fidgety, restless, you know, that's why fidgets and you know,
the those sensory. Sorts
of sensory things are so important and have become so big. And I think when they're used as tools, they're really useful and helpful. But I think a problem is that they've been seen as toys now more so. But you know, the reason that is useful and important is because when we move, so our brain tries to create dopamine. Sometimes that's through movement.
Yeah.
So you can see, like, I'm even talking with my hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in a situation now. We're sitting at a table in a small room. We've got microphones in front of us. The context demands that I stay seated.
Yes.
That I stay close to the microphone.
Yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah. So my brain is trying to keep my mind, essentially, my brain's trying to keep my thoughts on track by doing other things.
Well, you say they can't see us, but I'm flicking my pen
around
all of my fingers, and I've been doing that all the way through our conversation. So that's so interesting, and I guess that, like, even for the dopamine release, I do tend to bring a lot back to video gaming, because I don't have any release for any dopamine from video gaming.
Mm.
I can't relate. No, I've got no interest in
it.
Mm-hmm. Whereas my son wants it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm asking, I guess the question would be, would that make sense for somebody who has a diagnosis of ADHD to be hyper-focused, essentially?
Yeah.
Hyper-focused on this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what my son tends to do is, if he wants something, he is relentless.
Mm-hmm.
And he will take whatever resources that he can put in his mind to get what he wants, and he won't give in,
mm-hmm.
whether that's through a tantrum or just keep going and going and going and going. And so when you say about this release of dopamine, is that a good example for perhaps even for me, like, now that we're talking now, to maybe zone in on and be like, okay, I have to recognize that, is a need for him, or is it just not a need, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So I would, and sort of what I want to say is I don't now in my career don't work with children.
Yeah,
I
that's, used to work with yes, kids. That's right. Yeah.
I have a child.
Yes, you do.
Probably why I don't
work same with sort of age as well,
yeah,
aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, if there's any other sort of people that work with kids out there listening, yeah, I may be misspeaking or saying maybe not quite the right things, but.
You can talk from your own personal experience.
Yeah, from personal experience. And also just from an understanding through the lens of ADHD and thinking about that aspect of regulation that we talked about earlier, right? So we have needs for, you know, we've got needs for sort of sensory regulation. Mm-hmm. I don't think I sort of trailed off and we started talking about something else, but like emotion regulation, sensory regulation, attention regulation. There's all of these other things and I would, you know, part of the sensory aspect of it for us is that we can feel very either overstimulated or very understimulated.
Right. And that's when the problems arise, if you like.
That can be where we, and particularly so for people with ADHD, have difficulty also regulating our emotions. Mm-hmm. So it might look quite extreme emotionally, when or behaviorally when we are seeking to try to regulate. So I actually wonder, you know, for kids with I would say sort of having a gaming addiction as separate from enjoying video games and using them as something that's sort of interest-based that they enjoy doing, that gives some reward and motivation, that's firing the dopamine off in the brain. That's two different things.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be wondering about, you know, where the drive for playing the game comes from.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, I know my, so for example, my daughter, she could, if we let her, she could go. And sometimes on weekends or school holidays, it can look like this sometimes.
Yeah.
But she can go for just hours with her face glued to, she loves to watch like YouTube videos of people making things or like, I don't know.
They watch crap, let's be honest. It's just total crap.
It's crap and it's very, there seems to be a lot of energy happening. And sometimes it's like that overstimulates me.
So right.
I have to say, please put some headphones on. I don't want to hear that.
Yes.
So either that or she likes her Switch games, she likes to play Minecraft or Animal Crossing or Mario Kart or whatever it is. And I know that for her it's I know the difference between when it's just she's bored and understimulated and she's sort of using that as a somewhere to focus her attention on.
Like a crutch almost.
Like a crutch, yeah. And then other times, so like if I a school pickup, for example, we get home from school and she's been working really hard, switched on all day to be to follow rules and to pay attention and to, you know, perform and mask and be, you know, socially appropriate and whatnot. And so to curb her impulses and her emotional reaction, she's been trying to regulate all day. Right. Yeah. So when she gets home from school, it's like that after school restraint collapse. Have you heard that of that term before? So it's like, you know, sometimes kids will come home from school of an afternoon and, you know, they might have had a great day at school or whatever day at school, they come home and there might be tantrums, there might be huge emotions and meltdowns and, you know, they're talking back and they're what we would think of as being sort of misbehaving or being quite challenging. It's this idea that they've kind of held it together all day at school and that's so effortful that they come home and home is a safe haven and a safe space and a safe attachment for them.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I can just be, I can be and let go and they kind of let the walls down and it all kind of floods out whatever they've been holding in all day.
That makes a lot of sense,
So I know like for my daughter, for example, sometimes after school she'll want to go straight to the watching the little YouTube shorts or playing some Minecraft or something.
Yeah.
And I know for her that that serves a regulation need at that point in time.
Yeah.
Right. But for example, on the weekend where it looks different is we might be not quite ready to, why is it that they wake up at the absolute ass crack of dawn on a weekend? but you cannot get them it's out so of bed true. That happened. School on a school day.
Yeah, that happened to me this morning.
Yeah, same, same.
I'm sure that all the listeners are going to relate to that one. Yeah. Why are you up at six? It's a Sunday.
No, but I can't get you up at six on a Monday through Friday. That's out of the question.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so she'll be up super early in the morning on a Saturday, Sunday. We're not ready to get up yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so she'll turn on the TV or she'll watch her whatever or she'll play her game.
Mm.
And so starting the day like that, then I know then it's quite hard to break away from that, to shift her attention and her focus when we're up and we're about. And we like to start a day on a weekend typically with like going for a walk down near the beach, grabbing a coffee, taking the dog for a walk, getting out and about in the fresh air and the sunshine, which is very good for her and good for us.
Because it regulates the nervous system,
Regulates the nervous system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, there's regulation needs, as in we have needs to try and regulate whether it's sensory, nervous system, emotions and whatnot. So I just would be curious, if gaming's an issue, I'd be curious about how does it show up, when does it show up? Sometimes does it look different than other times? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And also, and as you were talking, I was just thinking about an incident that happened for me over the weekend, and it's always related around to iPad and that social connection that I suppose that he gets that we're not, or I'm definitely not familiar with, because when I was younger, it's hard to relate to your children, isn't it? Because when I was younger, our way of communicating with our friends was on the phone. And when we said we were going to meet up with them, we would meet up with them. Mm. And that was the thing. We didn't play online with our friends. And I'm only really having this realization right in this moment. But we didn't do that, did we? We just literally was like, I'll meet you at Sainsbury's. That's a UK term. Coles over here.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll hang out and we'll skate.
Yeah.
And you know, that was at the age of like 9, probably, onwards for me. I was allowed out around about that age. Mm-hmm. I've also noticed that we're scared to let our kids out.
Absolutely.
At this sort of age, whereas
that
we were...
That was my thought right when you said that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, my daughter's 9. There's no way I would let... But also, I think society's changed a lot.
Yes, and we also have, like we said before, access to information that our parents probably didn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, more thing, it's just like, that's their world, isn't it?
Mm.
So I'm thinking to myself, it's probably not about the addiction to the gaming, it's about the social aspect of it.
Mm.
And so perhaps... if I was just to rethink it and have another perspective, maybe it's not about the gaming. Maybe it's about the social interaction with his friends and the connection. Yeah.
So is he playing games where we don't have those kind of games at home, mainly because I wouldn't even know how.
I don't know. I have no idea how he's done this, by the way.
Yeah. So he's playing games where you've seen it on like TV or whatever. Kids are like sitting
with
there
the headsets and stuff.
Headsets
no,
and they're talking.
I can hear everything.
Or, yeah.
So he's only got an iPad at this stage. He's 8. I'm waiting to be able to get some form of regulation with the gaming before he gets an Xbox or a PlayStation, which is probably what they do when they're actually gaming.
Yeah.
So when he's gaming, I'm saying he's probably with Roblox with a handful of friends from school that are online. And actually, I can hear their whole conversation.
Yeah,
and it's usually like, I'm hiding over here. If you get that gold brick, you can bash me or something like that. You know what I mean? It's innocent.
Yeah.
It's innocent.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, so that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Just had a bit
like
of an epiphany. Yeah, it's like a play date online.
Yeah.
And so the incident that I had was pretty serious. He lost his temper, which, again, comes with the
emotion regulation.
Regulation, yes. Yeah, so I'm aware that what he did was wrong. And I'm not even sure, given the condition that he's diagnosed with of ADHD, that he even understands the seriousness of what he did, age and also, you know, ADHD. I don't know if he knows.
Mm.
But the thing is it's just, I guess, with the diagnosis comes all of these types of challenging episodes like that, where it is really emotionally draining on the parent. I'm sure it's just as emotionally draining on a child. And like, you know, you deal primarily with adult diagnosis, but you have your own and you understand it.
And so, many of my adult clients also have children who are neurodivergent.
Well, it's hereditary, is it?
Largely
hereditary?
It's as heritable as height.
Wow.
So thinking about, you know, if you have parents who are tall, or yeah. one parent who's tall and one who's short, you know, how likely is your child to be tall also?
Yeah.
Similar stats in terms of ADHD.
Which is great to know.
Yeah.
Because that means if you have somebody neurodivergent in the family and you're seeing these signs, it's a good indication to, yes, go through the channels of getting a diagnosis.
Yeah. It's funny because it seems to be that many, I'd say the vast majority of adults who either have come to work with me therapeutically or have reached out for an assessment. So I also provide assessment and diagnosis of ADHD in adults. And so the vast majority of people are there because their children have undergone a diagnosis or assessment.
Mm.
And, you know, through that process, they've, you know, become maybe researched or become very aware of some of the challenges and characteristics and traits,
yes.
and gone, well, that sounds like me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably, you know, I'm very raw on my podcast about my own experiences.
Yeah.
And that literally sounds, you just summed up what it would be for me, is that
yeah.
I'm looking at this thinking, okay. And, you know, it's funny because I'll say to my husband something along the lines, he's not my husband, but I call him my husband all the time. You know, their dad. I'd say something along the lines of that and he's like, you're fine, you know. And my dad will do the same. So then they'll put the seed in that there's nothing wrong. But not wrong, but you know what I mean.
It's interesting though, isn't it? That because it's almost like they're trying to reassure you.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel reassuring?
No, it feels like I go, yeah, that's what I thought. I was just stressed and, you know. And, yeah, but what you've just said then is completely what I did.
Yeah.
Look at my son and be like, okay, and then you kind of grow up. I must admit, I have always grown up thinking that I was different to a lot of, like, other people.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always, I guess it's that misconception that if you've got ADHD, you find it really difficult to maintain relationships and you're socially quite awkward, or you can be putting yourself into, how can I word it? Like, not being as popular or, like, you know, not finding it hard to maintain relationships
and hard to fit in and connect.
Mm. Only that's probably the one thing that I didn't have. I don't see my son having it at the moment. However, he's 8, so they argue and fight with their friends all the time and hijinks,
normal.
You know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
normal.
Yeah.
But, I, you know, that's the other thing. So maybe let's dive a little bit on that before we wrap up part one. With that misconception, I suppose, because that's probably the one thing that has had me to
confused.
The point. Yeah, I know that my time management is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in fact, one time when I was at work, I used to work for a company called XCOM Education, and I kept getting pulled in for being told off for being late. And I was like, it's like an illness. I can't help that. But I'm really good at my job, so we shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
And literally, my boss at the time just pissed himself with laughter and was like, good point.
Okay,
and that was it.
Yeah.
And so I was...
Whether it's you're getting, you know. A week's... I mean, gosh, this is a thing with time management, isn't it? We can, like, go a whole day and have gotten nothing done, or we can spend an hour and get a whole day's worth
yes,
of work done. Right?
Exactly.
So it's, again, about, like... almost creating this perfect shitstorm, excuse my language, of like pressure and urgency and time sensitivity and negative consequence if we don't get it right, if we don't get it done right.
Mm-hmm.
So that can cause us to hyperfocus on something that's not intrinsically interesting.
Yeah.
Or we can be very hyperfocused on something that we've just found really fascinating and interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like video games or like, you know, you might suddenly sort of have a thought, you know, looking something up and then hyper-focus and all of a sudden you know all about the life cycle of bees.
Or, I did it on mushrooms.
Yeah.
I think I watched...
It was about mushrooms.
Yeah, it was on Netflix. It was fantastic. Got documentary. I think it was called Fantastic Fungi or something like that. And so this is so funny because I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, I have ADHD. I was watching Fantastic Fungi, and after that, it was like I joined up to all these websites. They're really annoying emails that come through now, you know. And it was just all about like the clinical factors of what mushrooms can do. I'm convinced of it as well, I have to say. Like, I am really convinced of it. But it is right. I mean, I can be very hyper focused. Like, for example, if I'm writing, I like to journal, and that can take up time. Like, an hour has gone by and I thought it was just like 10 minutes, you know, them sorts of things. Is that something that's like also
the time? So if we're thinking about I started talking about neuroaffirming language and neuroaffirming practice before, and I think I again started a thought, didn't quite finish it, because language and thinking about being neuroaffirming and not using really deficit based language, or language that kind of pathologizes or says there's something wrong with how we are, or the things that sort of typically present for us. So a word that I went to use, the word time blindness, which is a really common word used to sort of describe this concept of just like losing time or not being able to accurately estimate how long something's going to take.
Like, no realistic time consumption of what something's going to take. That's me all over, oh my gosh, to a T.
Yeah.
So I'll be there at one. So I'll think that doesn't matter all day.
Yeah.
I ain't getting there till three.
A nicer, more affirming description would be like time optimism, right? So, you know, for example, I'm a shocker for either being late or scooting in like right on the nick of time.
The nick of time.
And it doesn't matter if I've tried all the things of like setting my alarm earlier or whatever. It's like the time just sort of disappears. Someone snatches it away and all of a sudden 40 minutes have gone, and I'm like, now I've got 20 minutes to, you know, be ready to walk out the door.
That happens to me a lot. However, funny you should say that about the setting the alarm. That's been, I like to, if my mental health is suffering, for example, I would like to, I journal a lot. And I'll put in my journal what my action plan is, because I've done a lot of research into, you know, action rather than reaction, which I think is very, very helpful, especially if you do have ADHD or the symptoms of ADHD, because you don't necessarily need to have the diagnosis, but what you do need is
structure
and the tools, which we can talk about later. But, you know, so right now my new thing was to get up at 6:30 in the morning. Now, I previously had tried that, and what I was doing is I was like, right, I'm getting up at 6:30 in the morning because that gives me an extra 45 minutes before the kids get up. But what I was trying to do in that window wasn't just get up early. I was also trying to do breath work, and I was also trying to meditate. So I was trying to do too much. So what I've done now is I've stripped it back.
Great.
And I've stripped it back just to getting up early. That's step one. Get up early so that you can have some time without the kids being awake. And it doesn't always happen, because I swear it's like they know I'm awake. They get it. But when it does happen, I've had that half an hour. So at the moment, when I've perfected that, or I don't like the word perfection, when I've made that good, that's when I'm going to add, okay, I'm going to do a 10-minute breath work. Do you know what I mean? When it's all structured.
Yeah.
So I think that's like, you know, Just because you'd mentioned, obviously, about the getting up early. But it's just to not overwhelm yourself, right?
Totally. It's so interesting, because one of the things that I tried implementing for myself, and this is something that comes up a lot with clients as well, actually, but one of the things that I tried implementing was like this, you know, you see like whether it's influencers on, on social media, or, you know, perhaps people who are sort of quite well-known like motivational speakers and whatever, they talk about, you know, the importance of the morning routine, having a morning routine. I thought, right, well, that's what I need. I just need a morning routine and I'll do all this self-care stuff. It's going to be amazing. And I was, I had so much trouble sort of following through with it. And I found that so frustrating, and I was so frustrated with myself until I And actually at the time I was working with an, she's a, also a psychologist, so she's an ADHD coach and psychologist over East, and was doing telehealth sessions, and I was talking to her about this just sort of in passing. And as I was talking to her, it really occurred to me, I was like, oh, I'm setting too many rules for myself around what this has to look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my mind, she's like, well, what does routine mean to you? And I said, it means same.
Yeah.
Like it's something that's the same that I do, these steps that I follow every day. And then I was like, but I don't need the same thing every day.
Actually, change is good.
Change is good. So it's like this idea of flexible. So structure, we need structure, but we also need flexibility, and we need to be able to respond to whatever our needs are that day.
Amazing.
Right? Mm-hmm. So like a flexible structure. So instead of waking up and my morning routine being, right, I wake up and I do, for example, I had all this list of all of these things that I wanted to try and do to make my morning so great. You know, like breath work, a mindfulness, exercise, journaling, da da da. And I ended up sort of doing none of them or getting stuck on one of them. But rather now I wake up and I ask myself, well, it's a bit different now. We've got the rescue dog. So she comes first. We've got to take her for a sniffy walk.
Yeah.
But essentially this idea is more like, okay, I wake up and I ask myself, what do I need right now? Or what do I need today? So doing like a little check-in, a little scan of my body. Am I feeling stressed and anxious about something that's got something on my mind? Maybe I need to do a brain dump and I do need a journal. Are my muscles feeling kind of tight, like I slept funny? So maybe then instead I need to do a stretch. Like, am I feeling a little unfocused, or I've got something big on that day, so then maybe I need to do a mindfulness or some grounding.
Yeah, that is brilliant. And that's really good advice as well, because just breaking it down, and I love that what you just said there with the body scan.
Yeah.
Like, what do I need? Not, oh, these are the things. I love that. That's really, really, really great. I'm so glad that you said that. But what I think we'll do is we'll just wrap up this part one, which has been amazing. I'm so excited to do part two.
Yeah.
So for this week, and we'll have you back on next week for part two, when we all delve a little bit more into, we've talked about all of the symptoms for a diagnosis, and then we can go into next, on our next podcast, go into more of the actual
process. Excited. Yeah.
And thank you so much for being here with us today. And we will definitely look forward to seeing you next week on episode, I think it will be 18, ooh, part two.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, guys. You can find us on all the socials, including Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Just search for Coffee with Kathy and Claire and make sure that you follow and subscribe.
Love you all.
Bye.